WordStream is a show about writers and writing. And we have underwriters who I want to thank for helping us do that. The Tunbridge Public Library, you can check out its calendar of events and much more at tunbridgelibrary.org. Seven Star Arts Center in Sharon, a nonprofit dedicated to nurturing a love and understanding of the arts and serving the local community by providing diverse educational opportunities and performances. Learn more at 7starArts.org. Royal Trail Works, owned and operated by Tom Wells, based in Royalton, is a construction company dedicated to the enhancement of skiing and riding within the ski industry. They're at royaltrailworks.com. The White River Valley Herald covers the people and events of the communities in the White River watershed. Published weekly, it can also be viewed online at ourherald.com. Robin Reynolds is an underwriter, as is the Royalton Memorial Library. You can check out its calendar of events as well as other services it offers by going to royaltonlibrary.org. Abracadabra Coffee Company in Woodstock offers a full menu of coffee with seasonally changing signature drinks and house-made syrups. You can find out what else they have by going to abracadabracoffeeco.com. Abracadabra, that's hard for me to say. Abracadabracoffeeco.com. The Frankenberg Agency in Randolph is a family-owned business. Hold on a second.
Gene?
Hold on a sec. I'm lost now. The Frankenberg Agency, a family-owned business that's been providing Vermonters with personal, commercial, and farm insurance coverage for more than 50 years. You can find them online at frankenbergagency.com. The Co-op Food Stores in Hanover, Lebanon, and White River Junction, member-owned, open to all, offering produce, prepared meals, a wide assortment of groceries, and even automobile service. You can learn more by going to coopfoodstore.com. And now, if this works the way it's supposed to, Jim may have to talk for the whole hour because I'm going to have a heart attack. I'm not a very techie person, but I think this is Jim Kenyon. How you doing, Jim?
Good. Good morning, Gene. How are you?
I'm okay. I'm really happy to hear you. I'm happy that this worked the way it's supposed to. Usually I have somebody standing over my shoulder helping me with this minor technical transition, but I don't today.
Well, I have you. Technology isn't my strong suit either, so we're both in the same situation. So the town meeting day, exciting, always an exciting day in Vermont. It's something I remember since I was a kid, growing up in West Windsor, Vermont, you know, small town Vermont, where town meeting was a day off from school, which I think it still is the case. But I have fond memories of it because it was the first day. Oftentimes when it was signs of spring were coming out, depending where that first Tuesday in March fell in Vermont. But that was the day that your mom often let you wear sneakers for the first time since.
Really? Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, so that's how I remember town meeting. It's like, you know, your parents or your grandparents would go to town meeting and you would hang outside with your friends, splashing in the puddles outside of the in the Story Memorial Hall parking lot.
There go the sneakers, huh?
Yeah, there go the sneakers. But my grandmother was the town clerk in West Windsor.
Really?
And so that was, so it was always a busy time of the year for her.
Oh,
I
bet.
And my grandfather, who was a George Aiken Republican, I don't know if we have any of those left anymore in Vermont. But
he was the first Republican to oppose the Vietnam War. Is that correct?
Right. Senator Aiken was, I think, and I'm paraphrasing now, had the famous quote that we should just declare victory and get the hell out. I may not have it quite right, but that's how I remember
that,
it.
That gets the idea across.
Yeah, that was along the lines of Senator Aiken, but it was much more a different Republican Party back then, I think we could say. But I remember my grandfather would, he was, you know, even though he was a Republican, he was a strong union man. He was the one of the leaders of the union at Cone Blanchard in Windsor. But, you know, town meeting was a big event. He'd be pouring through the town report in the days before the meeting. When they actually gave town reports, they sent them in the mail. And saying, a lot of towns don't do that now, I think. And that's kind of discouraging. They either, you can get them online or you can go to the town offices. But it used to be that they would mail out a copy to every resident.
Yeah, well, it's free versus whatever the cost is of those mailings, so I guess
that
takes care of that.
Money, but you know, democracy isn't cheap, I would say. But my grandfather would, you know, go to the meeting, sit there and ask questions about the school budget, and then all the voting, and I think some towns still do this, is voting from the floor for town offices, which always added to the suspense, I think. Still enjoy seeing towns that do that, where it's you know, there's a good argument made that it's, you know, it doesn't lead to a lot of participatory journalism, participatory town meeting, because people have to be at the meeting to vote.
Right.
But at the same time, it does add to the intrigue, I think, of it, because you don't know who's going to necessarily run for office, who's going to run for the select board or school board until that very moment when it's time to endorse candidates for office. So that was always one of the things that I found interesting about town meeting, was that how things played out right literally on the floor, as they say.
So how much older were you when you actually attended a town meeting?
I don't, you know. Probably it wasn't until I was, as a reporter. I mean, I'm trying to think back, you know, as a kid, I went to town meetings but didn't vote. But then as a reporter, when I came out of college at the Valley News, it was all hands on deck kind of thing at town meetings.
Oh, yeah.
Time. So it was then that you started going to town meetings, and then I worked in Florida for 10 years where they don't have town meetings, and came back to Vermont in the late 90s. And the Valley News has always devoted a lot of resources to town meeting. It's not quite like it used to be because we don't have the size staff we had.
Yeah, but excellent previews the last couple weekends, first Vermont and then New Hampshire in the Valley News.
Yeah, that makes it... that makes it particularly challenging because it's a doubleheader. You play the first game and it's with Vermont, and then a week later you kind of come right back with New Hampshire. So that makes the Valley News unusual in that sense with covering two states.
Right.
But it's a good, reporter, young reporters, myself included, would get a early lesson in what, you know, tax rates were and per pupil spending, and to be able to write about it, you have to be able to understand it. And so that was
That was something I wanted to ask. How difficult is it to get your arms around something like that and make a narrative that people who weren't there and the people who were there saying, "Oh, that's not what happened."
That is a challenge. And you really depend on public officials to, ahead of all the work goes in this may sound corny, but it's like preparing for a wedding. You know, you have all these plans.
Yeah.
And then actually, that would take more work than the actual
good analogy.
The day, and you just hope for good weather. But, so you plan on town officials to walk you through how the tax rate they've come up with and school spending, and you look at the warrant articles and figure out where, and that's when the one thing, Vermont's warrant and New Hampshire's warning, maybe I have it backwards, but there's little things you have to pick up on, but you have to go through the articles that are on the ballot and try to figure out what the important ones are. And spending plans are always at the top of the list, but you also, it's the old cliche about there'll be more argument over, a purchase of a grader, a road grader, than, a multi-million-dollar school budget. So that makes covering town meeting not only challenging but fun.
Well, I mean, the people who attend town meeting, presumably they're prepared as well, not just the reporters. They've gone over all this stuff and talked with their fellow voters and other people and, are familiar with the whatever is going to be voted on before it comes up.
Yeah, I think so. I think the percentage of people that go to town meeting is just like general elections. It's less than 50%, and I think that's why towns have moved. I know that's why towns have moved to Saturday meetings, hoping to that will increase attendance because of people's work schedules, but it does take people to do their homework and be informed. And I think people that go to town, they enjoy that part of it. They enjoy going through the town report and putting asterisks and marking it up themselves, the things that they might want to ask about. And they do have that opportunity to ask questions, and that's what, you often hear town meeting described as the purest form of democracy. And one of the reasons is because you can stand up, you can raise your hand, get noticed by the moderator, and ask a question or speak your piece.
All right. I am, just so I can have a little break here, I am going to play one of the songs that you requested, and this is the Mavericks, and the song is Swingin'.
Oh, great. I love this song.
Oh,
Here on WordStream, we are talking with Valley News columnist Jim Kenyon and my co-host, Todd and Rose are, imagine that, at town meeting in Tunbridge. So I'm doing this all by myself today. I'm Gene Cassidy. So, Jim, Galen Mudgett, I imagine he will be was the town moderator in Sharon, and he died about a week ago in a fire at his house. People are really upset about that. They say he was a terrific guy. I didn't know him.
Yeah, I didn't either, but yeah, that's a tragedy. Yeah, moderators, you can really tell the good moderators from the ones that, that struggle, because one, again, doing their homework, but you have to have the good town moderators have some levity and can get through a lot of the structure of town meeting and people when they have questions, and sometimes they have to bring in the town attorney to say, you know, are we doing this vote correctly? Because the last thing you want to happen is you take a vote and there's some procedural mix up and then has to be undone at a later time. But yeah, the moderator, I think, is the key. They are the kind of the conductor of the orchestra.
Well, yeah, I suppose it's like musicians or writers. The ones who are really good make it look easy. They just sail right along, and people
and they have fun with it too. I mean, that's the thing. It has to be a job that people want to do than they're forced to do. So
right. Because this is a show about writers and writing, I want to go back a little bit and ask you when you decided to do this as a profession. When did you decide to become a writer? Was this something that you liked and were good at when you were young, or did you? How did that come about?
Well, I think like a lot of people, there was my teachers were the great in high school were the great influencers. You know, I used the joke that it was really writing was my only career path since I was so bad in math, which the town meeting time isn't a thing you want to acknowledge. But no, it was, I still remember my creative writing teacher, Penny Armstrong at Windsor High School. We had a journalism class. Mr. McGill was the teacher. It was, so there was those early on, there's people that encourage you to write. I mean, and we needed, and I think that's true for whatever field you go into, is you
right.
need those mentors at an early age to encourage you. And the story I tell is that Mr. McGill was my journalism teacher, and I was also the yearbook editor, and he was the yearbook advisor, and he said, you know, what would you ever think of want to write for a newspaper? And I was an athlete in high school, not a very good one, but I like sports. And so he said, well, the Valley News is probably the best local newspaper. Why don't I reach out to the editor and see if they would be, you know, if they would be interested in having, and this is when I was, you know, a 16-year-old high school junior.
Right.
And the editor, Mal Borite, came down to Windsor High School to meet me and said, yeah, sure, come on up this summer, you know. And I started writing, you know, sports then when I was in high school. So it was just, I say that, you know, it's the only thing I've ever done is work at a newspaper, except, you know, when I was in high school earlier, mowing lawns in a cemetery, which sometimes I thought was more. I learned more from that experience that I did in some of my early journalism classes. But so no, I think I took the right career path.
This is a question that I like to ask people who work at newspapers who went through this. At what point did the Valley News become primarily digital, and what was that like for you? Was it a change for you?
Yeah, I'm a dinosaur in the sense that, you know, when I first went to the Valley News, we had manual typewriters. Okay.
Yeah.
And I remember working and moving when I was in college at St. Michael's College, which had a journalism program. The editor of the Valley News, Mr. Borright, got me a part-time job at the Free Press doing sports, and they had IBM Selectric typewriters. So I was like, well, this is a whole new world.
Yeah.
So the whole digital thing did, I mean, when I saw, I was working in Tampa, I was a reporter at the Tampa Tribune, which was, you know, a large, call a newspaper back in the 90s, and I can remember when they decided to go online, you know, this was the, you know, it was like the hula hoop. It was this big craze. All of a sudden, they had divided a whole part of the, you know, we were in a four-story building, and they devoted a whole half of one floor to this new online adventure. I call it adventure. They called it adventure. But and the whole idea was that they could just, the future was that, you know, this was the future. This was in the early 90s, and that this was where newspapers, where they were going to make their money, and everything was free, you know, unlike the print newspaper, you could go online and get your news for free. Well, that hasn't worked out so well for newspapers.
Right.
I think in the beginning, I was a print journalist, so I, you know, in Tampa, and I was looking at this like, I was curious, but wasn't really that interested in it. I mean, we had some people that jumped right over to news, but you got to also remember this was the 90s, was the time when the internet was just really, you know, becoming a tool that, that reporters started to use, and there were a lot of good things out of it. I tell the stories that when I was getting ready to come back to the Valley News in 96, 97, around then, I'd gone online. I was trying to think of some stories I was going to work with the Valley News. I was going to be the statewide reporter. And we were setting up an office in Montpelier. And so I was trying to think, you know, I was going online to do some research and what kind of stories to do. And I'd looked at some census numbers, and it showed that that the town of Norwich, that like 95% of the people were not born in Vermont; they were out of state. I thought, well, this is a very interesting story. I'm like, so I started to do my research and said, but then it suddenly dawned on me is that the reason that 95% Norwich does have a lot of people who have moved from other states. But the underlying factor here was that the people that were, you know, families in Norwich, their children were born in Hanover, Dartmouth Hitchcock, or what at the time was Mary Hitchcock over the years. So it really wasn't that you had all these people moving up from Connecticut, New York to Vermont or to Norwich. It was just the hospital where people were born was New Hampshire, so their birth certificates said they were born in another state. But
yeah.
I use that as an example of how you have to be careful when you're looking at things on. I use that story with young reporters that when you look at things online, they're not always what they appear to be, and that's because that would have been that wouldn't have been a good way to get my Valley News second career started if I'd written that story.
At what point did you become a columnist, and what drove that? Was it an editor who said,
Jim Fox, who deserves all the credit for this, is when I was in Tampa, we'd lived in Tampa for about 10 years, and I loved working in Florida. Florida is a great news state, but our kids were getting to in age. The joke is in our family is that my son came home from school one day and said, y'all, and my wife's like, okay, it's time for us to move back to New England. So I had some other opportunities in New England, but the Valley News, I talked to Jim Fox, the editor who I hadn't worked with before. I started out my career at the Valley News and then went to Florida and then came back. So when I was coming back, I talked to Jim Fox and said, you know, really what my career path is, I'd love to be a news columnist. I knew the columnists at the Tampa Tribune and admired their work, and I thought it was something I'd like to do. And Jim, the Valley News had a columnist before, and I think that was something that Jim was, he was devoted to having. But first he wanted me to get this, and it shows you how things have changed. He wanted to start a statehouse bureau, a one-person statehouse bureau in Montpelier. So Jim and I went to Montpelier, found some office space right downtown, and I worked out of that and did the drive, the commute during the legislative session from Norwich to Montpelier, and other people did that too. Nori and Kathy Hoy, who both were big in state government, they did that commute every day, so it wasn't unusual. So anyway, I'm dragging this story out, but...
I think it's great.
And it was fun covering the legislature back then. It was such a different environment. I believe the Rutland Herald had four reporters, the AP
wow.
had three, AP was big. Burlington Free Press had three reporters. So yeah, it was. And actually, I just talked to Lieutenant Governor John Rogers last week, and this came up is that we don't have that robust news coverage of the State House anymore. And it's, Digger does a fine job, but that's about it. And so the state has suffered from that because we don't have that watchdog that we would have back decades ago.
Right.
But anyway, so I covered the legislature, and this was during civil unions and school funding, which the Brigham decision had just come out. If people remember that, that was this Vermont Supreme Court decision that led to school funding issues that Vermont is still dealing with. And there was something called gold towns that wanted to get around this revenue sharing. And so they created private funds to support their schools to avoid paying extra taxes. So that was an exciting time. So then, so this was back in the late 90s, early 2000s. And I said, I'd like to start writing columns. And Jim Fox said, well, I have one more assignment for you. And he says, I'd really like to look at this. And Jim is brilliant and has been a big factor in my career. But Jim and the publisher, John Koontz at the Valley News, really wanted me or someone at the Valley News to look at this divide of how working people in the Upper Valley were struggling to make ends meet. We called them, quote unquote, the working poor back then.
Mm-hmm.
But it was the whole idea that it wasn't, this whole idea that people were just lazy and didn't want to work, and that's what, was problems with, why they couldn't find housing and support themselves. But it was this whole idea that, yes, you could have a job, a decent job in the Upper Valley, and still not make ends meet. And Jim said, I'd like you to take up to a year to work on this
really
project. And it was just unheard of and when I tell reporters this today that, I was given a year
really blow their minds.
Yeah, it's just, and it doesn't, in fact, in John Kuntz, who passed away just a year ago, he'd been at the Washington Post, their in-house lawyer during Watergate there. And when he passed away, the Post called me for to have a comment on his obit, and it talked about that, how, you know, we gave a, you know, he had to sign off on this, that a reporter would have a year to do a story. And so anyway, the story became The Other Side of the Valley, which you can still find online, and it did win some, you know, national recognition because it was basically a eight or nine part series. I followed four families for, well, it turned out, I think I ended up doing 10 months. I think I got it finished. It ran, and I started in August of 2001, and it ran in June of 2002. And that was, so that was what I did before I became a columnist, and that's, and then I was fortunate enough, the Valley News, Jim, again, and John said, well, why don't we send you down to the Poynter Institute in St. Petersburg, Florida? They're having a conference, a week-long conference for young editorial writers and columnists, just getting that started on their, on writing with authority, I think they called it, or something. Mm-hmm. And so that was a good foundation for me. And I still remember a story coming out of that, is that Sally Jenkins is a Washington Post sports columnist now. I don't, people might have heard her dad, Dan Jenkins, former sports
illustrator. Yeah, and Sally writer. Jenkins is really top shelf, too.
Top of her field. And I remember, so she was at this conference. You know, we were there for a week, and she told a story about her dad. And they were, I think they lived in, her dad grew up in Fort Worth, Texas, right out somewhere around the Dallas area. And so when Sally was a young girl, he took her back to that area and wanted to show where he grew up. And so they started driving down the street, and Sally says to his, you know, dad, you're driving the wrong way, you know, on this one-way street. And he turns to Sally and says, honey, that's what journalists do. And I've always followed that. I mean, I think there's a lot of truth to that. That's what journalists do.
That's a great story. All right. Yeah. I'm going to play another song you selected. This is a fellow from a little town in Vermont who struck a chord and became just nationally overwhelmingly popular. This was during the pandemic, but he's still making music. This is Noah Kahan from Stratford, and this is Stick
Season.
Hanover
High, yeah.
As you promised me that I was more than all the miles combined, you must have had yourself a change of heart like halfway through the drive, because your voice trailed off exactly as you passed my exit sign. Kept on driving straight and left our future to the right. Now I am stuck between my anger and the blame that I can't face. And memories or something, even smoking weed is not replaced. And I am terrified of weather, because I see you when it rains. Doc told me to travel, but there's COVID on the planes. And I love Vermont, but it's the season of the sticks. And I saw your mom, she forgot that I existed. And it's half my fault, but I just like to play the victim. I'll drink alcohol till my friends come home for Christmas. And I'll dream each night of some version of you that I might not have, but I did not lose. Now you're tired tracks in one pair of shoes, and I'm split in half, but that'll have to do. So I thought that if I piled something good and all my bad, that I could cancel out the darkness I inherited from Dad. No, I am no longer funny, cause I miss the way you laugh. You once called me forever, now you still can't call me back. And I love Vermont, but it's the sea.
play the victim, I'll drink alcohol till my friends come home for Christmas, and I'll dream each night of some virgin to you that I might not have, but I did not lose. Now your tire tracks and one pair of shoes, and I'm split in half, but that'll have to do. Of the sticks, and I saw your mom, she forgot that I existed, and it's half my fault, but I just like to play the victim. I'll drink alcohol till my friends come home for Christmas, and I'll dream each night of some virgin of you that I might not have, but I did not lose. Now your tire tracks and one pair of shoes, and I'm split in half, that'll have to do.
Welcome back to WordStream, where I'm talking with Valley News columnist Jim Kenyon about his career and about town meeting and writing about town meeting. And before I get back to my conversation with Jim, I just want to remind you that the WFVR Fun Drive starts next weekend on Saturday, and all the women hosts on WFVR are going to have shows that Saturday because it's International Women's Day. And then the Fun Drive will continue through our regular programming the next week, and we'll have a party for members at Seven Star Arts on Saturday. It's WFVR's 12th birthday. We hope you'll listen, and we hope you'll either renew your membership or become a member. Did I say I'm Gene Cassidy? I'm Gene Cassidy. I still am.
Yeah.
And this is, Jim Kenyon, columnist for the Valley News. And there's one thing about town meeting, and I've heard other reporters mention they like to emulate you with this. One of the reasons, I used to be in the news business, and one of the reasons I prized photographers so much, besides what they bring to the paper, is that they had to be there. They couldn't do it over the phone. There was no other way than to be present at the event and take a picture. And from what I understand from your colleagues, you actually go to all the places or most of the places that where something you're going to write about is the subject. And that's something for all reporters at town meeting, they have to go. You can't, I mean, they're...
can't fake it.
Right. So can you talk a little bit about, I had a reporter who said, it's much harder to hate someone when you're looking at them face to face. And she, that was why she would go out and interview the people who she was writing about, because they wouldn't be so suspicious of her. She had a sense of who they are instead of just a voice over the phone. Why does it matter that you be present?
Well, I think, one, it makes the job a lot more interesting. I mean, we spend enough time anchored to our desk, you know, in front of community, computer terminals typing away, and so any chance to get out of the office, I think a reporter should take it. And you also, and what you talked about, the journalist who said it's harder for people to hate you, and that is true when you're face to face. But it also, you get a better understanding of, because if you go into someone's work environment, you can see You're looking for little details, like things that, you know, the pictures they have on their walls, or the things that are how they, if they have a clean desk or a cluttered desk, you know, all those little things that we say in this business, don't tell me, show me. And that's what you don't get when you're over the phone. Or I know, you know, large organizations like Dartmouth Hitchcock, they only want to communicate with journalists by email now.
You know, right.
Spokespeople.
It's disturbing.
Yeah, I know. It's just not, you know, I guess it's, you know, it's efficient that way. But to me, you're taking the human element out of it. And that, you know, journalists don't get paid a lot, so you've got to have fun in this job. So it's, and that to me is, you know, going to different towns and going to meetings. I was at a select board meeting in Wethersfield on last Monday night, because they have a contentious select board race over there.
Yes, I read about that.
But it's so that's the kind of thing. I mean, I guess I could go. You know, the meeting is on YouTube and things, so I could have just waited till, you know, the next. I could have, you know, been home for dinner that night, Monday night, and then going to the meeting and just watch it on YouTube the next day. But to me, that you're not getting the flavor of the meeting and how it transpired. And it's, you know, it's 3 hours, it's a half hour down, a 2.5 hour, maybe a half hour back. But, you know, I think it's time well spent.
Well, you've mentioned fun a couple times, so you really enjoy this.
Oh, yeah, that's, I mean, you have to. I think, Gene, you probably say the same thing from your career, is that, there's not, and town meeting was always one of those exciting times, was that people would come back from meetings, you know, and everyone, meetings get out at different times, so it's like somebody might be back in the office by noon, but someone else would be dragging in at 3:30, and they would be joking like, oh, you got the wrong meeting this year, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah.
And we'd have pizza that night, and people would write their stories. It's that that whole environment that, you'd see some races that, select board races and things, or that you think you wouldn't see that, you know, that, well, that was an upset kind of thing. But you have to be a news junkie to appreciate what it's like being in a newsroom.
Okay. I am going to play the last song that you chose, and then we will get back to our conversation.
Hello, I'm Johnny Cash.
I hear the train a-coming, it's rolling around a bend, and I ain't seen the sunshine since I don't know when. I'm stuck in Folsom Prison, and time keeps dragging on. But that train keeps a-rolling on down to San Antone. When I was just a baby, my mama told me, son, always be a good boy, don't ever play with guns. But I shot a man in Reno just to watch him die. When I hear that whistle blowing, I hang my head and cry. I bet there's rich folks eating from a fancy dining car. They're probably drinking coffee and smoking big cigars. Well, I know I had it coming, I know I can't be free. But those people keep a moving, and that's what tortures me. Thank you.
Well, if they freed me from this prison, if that railroad train was mine, I bet I'd move it on a little farther down the line. Far from Folsom Prison, that's where I want to stay. And I'd let that lonesome whistle blow my blues away.
That was Johnny Cash. Who else would it be? Live at Folsom Prison. Here on WordStream on WFVR LP South Worldton, we're talking to Jim Kenyon. He's the columnist for the Valley News. I think the mid-Vermont area, we'll call it the Upper Valley, is lucky to have him. And we're talking a little bit about town meeting. And this year, and it seems probably a lot of years, the theme going into town meeting seems to be the cost of improving schools or simply keeping them up to date. And money. Can people afford that? Is that what you see as a general theme this year?
It's a theme that, well, because the demographics, and there's nothing new, but it's, you know, Vermont is changing. I mean, enrollment is declining as towns get smaller. And, you know, I was a product of a elementary school in West Windsor, Albert Bridge, that, you know, it's, well, there wasn't, and I'm showing my age now, but there was no such thing as, you know, kindergarten was private back then. It wasn't funded through the tax dollars. And so, you know, we had classes of grades 1 through 8. They were, you know, it was two grades per classroom. And you see, and things, you know, have gone to back to almost that in some towns, where, because the enrollment is shrinking so much, so it's the cost per pupil. Is the biggest challenge. How do you keep your small classrooms and your small schools and make it affordable? And, you know, the governor's come out with his plan, I think what's the framework of a plan. And it was 170 pages, I think Digger said was the bill. But that's always the rub in Vermont, is how do you keep your local small schools but make them so, you know, you don't tax people out of their homes.
Well, and you mentioned earlier how a high school teacher or teachers sort of prepared you and for the profession you're in now. And it was similar for me. I had a particular high school teacher who, I would not be doing what I'm doing and what I did without him. And I think there are probably, that we don't remember, at least I don't, my grammar school teachers as well, but it's just as important. And it seems to me that it's so important that they have, they're able to operate in an environment and be paid well enough and get enough respect that they can prepare future generations.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I still remember my first and second grade teacher, Miss Morgan. And I thought she was ancient, but she's probably about 40-something years old. But that was just, you know, in the eyes of a 5 or 6-year-old. But, yeah, that's always been a strength of Vermont, is its small schools and classrooms and dedicated teachers. There is that balancing act, and I think if the governor's plan, it points out, he's talking about having 5 or 6 school districts versus I think we have over 50 now. And there's probably, I've often thought one way you could divide, I don't know why we have to have 55 school superintendents in Vermont. I think that bureaucracy could be, you know, could be cut. But I think one option that I've heard is making it, you know, school districts by county. And what Vermont has, what, 14 counties, 12, 14, I should know this. And just have one superintendent per county. When I worked in Florida, Hillsborough County had, which was had 120,000 students at the time, which is more than the state of Vermont, and it had one superintendent, but you know, had an army of assistant superintendents. So I think there are ways to keep Vermont's schools, you know, each town to have its own schools, but there are ways that you can they can reduce costs, and hopefully the legislature and the governor will come up with some kind of compromise.
Well, there are three towns, and I should know this, but they just agreed to merge their fire departments. So that seems to be a way forward. If people are willing to agree to share a service where they have duplicate.
Yeah, no, I think there's a definite way to do it. And I floated an idea a couple years ago that went absolutely nowhere. It was with police departments. Is why doesn't Thetford in Norwich, because Norwich is in the process of needing a new police chief, you know, why don't you combine resources there? I mean, why did each town need its own police department or its own, you know, sharing of fire department resources? Does every town need a ladder truck kind of thing?
Just to interject, the town manager in the town that the newspaper I worked at was based in said, that's the kind of good idea that has no place in politics.
So, I don't know if he for it against it then. What is
he was... No, he liked the particular idea I brought to him was about something different, but he liked the idea, but he said, he just let me know, it's going nowhere, pal.
Yeah, I found that with the, when I talked about merging police departments in Thetford and Norwich, which seemed to be quite, you know, it could be a savings. Why does each town need a chief kind of thing? But, you know, people are very territorial, and that's been the challenge with schools of how you share resources. How does wealthy towns, because you know, with the state so dependent on property taxes to fund schools,
right?
It's not a level playing field, and you know, why should one town be able to offer its kids, you know, a foreign language, and the next town can't? You know, it's like it's how you look at is it you look do you look at Vermont as one community, or is it, you know, 300 communities kind of thing?
Jim, we're nearing the end of our time. I wish we had a lot more time. This is Jim Kenyon. He's the columnist at the Valley News. Is there anything that you would like to say to summarize, or something that I didn't ask you?
No, thank you. I mean, if the hour went by fast for me, I don't know how much I rambled. I'm much better. I hopefully am a much better writer than public speaker, but I said, but
you did great.
Yeah, but I think that to have these kind of discussions are healthy, and in around town meeting, you know, it's a tradition that Vermont that has, it goes back to, I think, even before Vermont became a state, and it's important to have that. The times we're in right now, I think Vermont, I keep thinking what happened this weekend in Waitsfield with the when the vice president showed up, and Vermonters literally stood up. I don't think I was prouder to be a Vermonter than when I saw that, what went on there, because I know I'm on my soapbox now, but I think, you know, Vermont can, last weekend, showed the way for the rest of the country.
Well, Jim, it's really been a pleasure talking to you. Jim Kenyon, the columnist for the Valley News. This is WordStream. You're listening to WFVR-LP. We got Harry Shearer with the show coming up. Jim, I am going to play as much as I can of Warren Zevon's for my next trick, I'll Need a Volunteer. And thank you for joining me.
All right. Well, thank you very much. Have a good day.
You too.
It's no magic spell.